Well, Kertov, everybody, Modim Simcha. I hope everybody having a nice Yontif. I don't exactly know what to wish everybody, but this should be meaningful. Despite, I'm sure everybody had a very different Seder and experience, and we should be healthy and be well and enjoy Yontif the best we can. So I'm going to talk about that, I guess, a little bit. So what I want to talk about today is the mitzvah of Shira and Simcha. On and related especially to the last day of Pesach. So I think we all know that our tradition teaches that we cross the Yam Suf on the seventh day of Pesach. Just to point out, that doesn't say anywhere in the Chumash. Okay, we know it. We discussed last week that the Jewish people leave at night or in the daytime, but everybody agrees it's pretty obvious in the Chumash they left Egypt on the 15th of Nisan. Well, we don't exactly know when they crossed the Red Sea, but our tradition, assumes that it was on the seventh day, and that's of course why we lane B'Shalach tomorrow in theory. But I do want to point out something kind of interesting. I'm going to share the document. If it doesn't come up, just let me know. And here, just give me 1 minute. Okay. I'll share. Okay. All right, everybody see this? Yes? I assume so. I hope so. Okay, I don't hear anybody. Now somebody should unmute themselves to let me know. But okay. So everybody knows that Nachshon Ben Aminadab was the first person who jumped into the sea. So I just want to that's a well-known thing. I think we're taught that in grade one. He came and the water went up his neck. He jumped in. So I just want to point out the Gemara in Sota actually has a machloket about it, and then try to give a very interesting explanation. We have on the top here, Itanya Yav Rabbi Meir Omer, Kishamdu Yisrael Alayam, Hayu Shvati Menaskim Zed Zed. It says the Jewish people were near the sea, we'll see, each one, they were Menaskim Zed Zed. They were trying to win, or they were all fighting with one another. Zeh Omer Ani Yoreitchila, Zeh Omer Ani Yoreitchila. So each tribe wanted to go down first into the Yam Suf. So Kapat Shifto Shel Binyamin. So the Gemara says that Shevet Binyamin, Yared La'em, and they jumped in. I didn't quote the rest of the Gemara. And the Gemara says that's why they were rewarded, that the Beit HaMikdash is built in the Chelek of Binyamin. So that's why the Gemara presents it, not the way we're normally used to hearing it. So then the Gemara says, Amar L'Rabim Yehuda, Lo Kachayam Asa. No, you're wrong. It's the exact opposite. Instead of everybody saying, we're going to be the first ones in the sea, everybody said, we're not going to be the first ones in the sea. Kapatz Nachshon Ben Aminadav, Yared Yam Tchila. So Nachshon Ben Aminadav jumped. So that's the more popular of opinion. So I just want to point out something that hopefully we can learn this the lesson. I heard this from Rabbi Dr. Aaron Levine, who was my great professor of mine at Yeshiva University, really one of the inventors of the field of Jewish business ethics, who unfortunately passed away a relatively young man a number of years ago. He's written many, many books on Jewish and business ethics. And when I was in Yeshiva University, he taught a course on comparative economic system. That was the name of the course. And it was really a course how a halachic economic system would write. If we could implement the Torah, Koshen Mishpats, so to speak, how would you run it in the modern day economy? He, of course, had a PhD in economics. And we're discussing this on a business level. So he quoted a fascinating explanation of the Lev Aryeh, wrote a commentary on Chulin, who says that, there's no argument here. There's no argument here that Rav Meir, even though the Gemara presents it as an argument, I don't know if this is the Peshat in the Gemara, but says like this, when the Jewish people were 10 miles from the sea, so everybody says, we're going to jump in first, we're going to jump in first. Rav Yehuda says, lo kachaya masa, that's true. But when they actually came to masa, the time came to actually jump in the sea, everybody got basically cold feet, and Nachshon Ben Aminadav had to jump in. And basically what he was saying is that, of course, people always say what they will do in a given situation. But when that situation arises, often they forget quite quickly, and they don't they don't do what they're going to say. And I think what we're going through now, you know, I've seen everybody's writing what's going to change afterwards and how we're going to be different. And I tend to agree with all the people who say probably very little, because human nature is to forget, and they'll have for a year or two in the budget more equipment for more money for hospital care and maybe for long-term nursing, please God. But I don't know, soon human nature is very hard to change and people don't like change, but maybe I'm wrong. And I hope I'm wrong, but that's what the Gemara is pointing out, that people will say lots of things in advance, but when they have to do it, they don't do it. So that's just an interesting thing, that an interesting idea that the Gemara presents a machloket, who jumped into the sea first. It's not necessarily clear. To take it the simple way, if there's an argument, whether it was the tribe of Binyamin, who then got rewarded with the Beit HaMikdash in their area, or the tribe of Yudan. Of course, the Beit HaMikdash is half in Yehuda and half in Binyamin, or just, we say to try to not do the machloket. Okay, so now that's by the going down into the sea. So I want to discuss a few minutes, of course, Hallel on the last day. I think most people are also aware, if I were to ask somebody and if somebody would like to chime in, please feel free to do so, why we don't say Hallel on the last days of Pesach. And just before you answer, we have a custom to say half hallel, but saying half hallel is a later custom. It doesn't really count. Either you say hallel or you don't say hallel. And I think the Sephardi, many of the Sephardi do not make a bracha when they say hallel on Rosh Chodesh, when they say half hallel, because the mitzvah is to say the full hallel. The custom developed later on to say half hallel. But why, if I would ask the average person why we don't say hallel, so everybody's going to say what? If somebody wants to be bold enough and volunteer to tell me why.
Same reason we dip our fingers in the wine.
Right, which is?
Because people are dying.
People die. So we're very sad about that. One should never rejoice when somebody, other people have to suffer. So we pour out the wine at the Seder and we can't say Hallel because there's... God got angry at the angels who were singing Masayadai, Yitovim Bayam. My creations, everybody's creating the image of God, the Egyptians too, they are drowning in the sea and you're singing. That's a terrible thing. So therefore we can't say Hallel. And then since we can't say Hallel on the seventh day, then we shouldn't say Hallel on Chol HaMoed either, because you don't want to make Chol HaMoed more than Yantum. So that's the very famous reason that everybody knows. There's a problem.
They're also about the Karbanot.
Yeah, so that's correct. So that's what I'm gonna show right now. So the problem with the second reason, which some of you may know, is that it doesn't appear anywhere in Talmudic, literature. So I'm gonna share my screen again. We'll go here. So I'll just point out here, we'll go to the next source, which for some reason, here we go. Okay, so this is Gemara in Erchin, of all places. Damar Rav Yochanan Mishrav Shimbar Yotzadak, Shmonasar Yamim Sheyachid Gomer Et HaHalel. There are 18 days that an individual says the entire Hallel. And then even if you're not with a minion, presumably what it means, Rav Soloveitchik for a long time had a minag that when he used to daven on his own, on Rosh Chodesh, he wouldn't say Hallel. I wouldn't say Hallel in a minyan. Rav Soloveitchik would travel between Boston and New York for 45 years. In the early days, he took the train. So often, he would miss minyan. He'd get a train, early in the morning to get to New York. So if it'd be on Rosh Chodesh, he wouldn't say Hallel, because that Shehayachid Gomer Bahem et Hallel. Anyways, what are these 18 days? The Shmoni Yimei Chag, 8 days of Sukkah, Shmoni Yimei Chanukah, Yonta Rishon Shel Pesach, the first day of Pesach, Yonta Rishon Shel Atzer, the Big Olah, those of us who live outside of Israel, have 21 days, because there are 9 days of Sukkah, the extra day of Simchas Torah, 8 days of Chanukah, 2 days of Pesach, and 2 days of Atzer of Shavuot. So the Gemara asks, Maishna B'chag, why on Sukkot do we say it every day? Why don't we say it every day on Pesach? So the Gemara says, the Chag are chalukim mekorbanoteihem. The Pesach ain't chalukim mekorbanoteihem. So on Yontif, on Sukkot, the korbanot are are different. What does that mean? We know that there's 70 parim we bring on Sukkot. And on the first day, it's 13, the second day, 12, down to 7. On Pesach, it's the same korban. It's I discussed this a few weeks ago in a different shiur that on all the Yamim Tovim, we bring an ayo, a par, and shiva kvasim. One, an ox, an ayo is a ram, and seven lambs. And then on Pesach and Shavuot and Rosh Chodesh, we bring two ayos, one ayo. We won't get into that now. But on Sukkot, the korbanot are double, because on Sukkot you bring two parim and 14 kvasim on Sukkot, because we mentioned Sukkot is a double holiday. Sukkot is the completion of Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, the culmination of the Shalosh Regalim. That's why it's known as, you know, Chag. That's the holiday known as holiday is Chag. And it's also the culmination of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. Sukkot is sort of a double holiday. The holidays are divided into these two sections, so we double the korbanot. Two parim and 14 pasim. On every other holiday, it's 1 and 7, including on Rosh Chodesh, by the way. And but the parim is a whole different thing, and that changes. So the Gemara says, because the korbanot change every day, therefore it's like a new holiday. On Pesach, it's the same holiday. Now, that's a fascinating reason, because first of all, it links the idea of Hallel, of singing, to korbanot. Now, we know that when we brought the korban Pesach, when the Mishnah says that they would say Hallel, not just at the night of the Seder, but they actually would say Hallel in the Beit HaMikdash while they were bringing the Korban Pesach. The Mishnah described very, very beautiful detail. The whole, everybody would come in, they'd line up in rows and with gold basins or silver basins, and everybody would sing together and have the Hallel. So there's a connection that hopefully we'll come back to between the bringing of korbanot and the notion of singing a song. By the way, that's why there's a prohibition to do work on Erev Pesach after Chatzot. It's kind of like Chol HaMoed. When a person brings a korban, it's like a mini yontif for them. So the fourth parak in Masechet Pesachim discusses there's a minhag. Some people do work Erev Pesach in the morning. Some people don't work. So the Mishnah says, but in the afternoon, the assumption is that nobody was working, because in the afternoon, that's a time for everybody to bring a korban. And when you bring a korban, it's like a semi-yontif. There's a connection. So somehow, the fact that it's the same korban on Pesach doesn't allow us to say Hallel again, whereas it does on Sukkot. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara doesn't know anything from, the Egyptians drowned. I don't even know why. Why that reason, to the best of my knowledge, only appears in the Middle Ages. The reason that we're sad the Egyptians drowned, that is quoted. The Beit Yosef, Rav Yosef Karo, brings it down in his commentary that the Egyptians drowned, and of course that became very famous. And it's for us living in sort of in democratic, societies, it is a beautiful idea that we don't want to rejoice when our enemy has to suffer, and therefore we don't say, but that the Gemara doesn't know from that reason. Why not? Anybody want to venture a guess why the Gemara doesn't know for that reason? So I can't say 100%, but it would appear to me that the Gemara doesn't know from that reason, because the Gemara doesn't hold by that reason. The Gemara didn't think that reason was a good enough reason. If you notice, here, I'll go back to the document. Let's go back here. You notice the Gemara that it's based on in Megillah, right here. Megillah Daf Yud. Amar Rav Yochanan, Mai Dikti Velo Karav Zeel Zeh Kol Halayla. When the Jews were at the Yam Suf and the Egyptians were approaching, they couldn't come to us. The angels wanted to sing song. My creations are drowning in the sea, and you want to sing? How terrible. So it's very nice, but you'll notice two things. God is talking to the angels. He's not talking to the Jewish people. Because there's a huge difference between the Jewish people singing and the angels singing. The angels didn't go through any slavery. They didn't suffer by the hands of the Egyptians. It would not be right for them to sing. The Jewish people, on the other hand, we suffered, and we have a right to sing, and we did sing as Yashir. That's what we do. On the seventh day of Pesach, we sing as everybody stands. As Yashir is so important. When we read in B'Shalach, there's a whole question whether, you know, we're allowed to do that. We're making it seemingly more important than the rest of the Chumash, but that is our practice. We stand for as Yashir Moshe, and therefore we do sing. So what do you mean we don't sing for the Egyptian drowning? We absolutely, we are singing. Why is that? Because when you suffer, you are allowed to sing when the your people and people who oppress you. If you look at the Egyptians, you look at, you know, a terrorist or Yamakshimo, a Nazi, you know, something happened. We don't say we're sad when they get hurt. And the truth of the matter, many years ago, I gave a Shabbos Agadol Drasha on the Bin Fole Vecha Al Tismach. So that's a famous saying of Shmuel HaKatan. I mean, it's a pasuk in Mishlei, but the Gemara says that Shmuel HaKatan, that was his favorite saying, Bin Fole Vecha Al Tismach. And I pointed out before, it's a beautiful explanation Rav Cook has, that it was Shmuel HaKatan who was the composer of Bil Malshini Maltitikva, the added blessing to the Shmon Esrei against their enemies, that God should have no mercy on them, Ta'ker, Tishaber, destroy them. So that was composed, the Gemara says very clearly in Masechet Bracha. Rabban Gamliel says, who knows the composer? What do you mean, who knows? Why couldn't he compose it? It says, and Shmuel HaKatan did it. So Rav Cook beautifully explains that only somebody who is full of love for their enemy can write a blessing of hate against the enemy. In other words, the average person, including Rabban Gamliel, who we know, how we took harsh stance against people, you give them any license to say something negative about somebody, they're going to exceed the license they're given. Only Shmuel HaKatan, who his life's motto was Min Fole Vecha Al Tismach, only he had the capability to know when you don't say Min Fole Vecha Al Tismach. Min Fole Vecha Al Tismach is not 100%. There are exceptions to that rule. So yes, sometimes, sadly, we have to pray for Bilam Al Shinim Al Tikva. So there is a tension, really, between the verse Bin Fole Vecha Al Tismach and another verse, Va'avod Rishayim Rina, when the wicked suffer, Va'avod Rishayim Rina, there's joy in the world. How you reconcile them, that's different people have different ways to reconcile the two verses. I always prefer they live in tension. At times we can rejoice sometimes with our enemies. We can be sad at almost at the same time. We're sad that we have to, we're sad that we reached such a situation. But I just find it quite interesting that the Gemara only discusses the idea of the Korbanot, and this idea that we all know and perhaps we all love, it works very well when you're living, you know, in America and it's peaceful and it's, you know, and the Cold War has ended. It's all a very beautiful idea. But sometimes in the real world, Bin Fole Vecha Al Tismach doesn't work so well. And you have to have Bavor Shram. I just want to point out those are the two different reasons that we don't say Hallel on the seventh day, or really the one reason of the Gemara, and the one reason that was given later on. Angels, they can never say Shira. The Jewish people, that's what they're referring. We do sing Shira for that. Okay. So that day, discuss a little bit about how it worked. We crossed the sea. And then a little bit about saying Hallel on the last day of Pesach. What I want to talk about in the remaining time is I want to talk about the mitzvah of Simcha on Yontif. And I'll start really with, let me go back to the document here for one moment. So I just want to quote this. This is from the Rambam in Hilchot Shabbos. So the Rambam lays out very, very beautifully, always very organized, like fashion. Arba dvarim nemru b'Shabbos. There are four things. It's an interesting word. He doesn't say arba mitzvot. Arba dvarim. The four ideas. Nemru b'Shabbos. Shnayim min haTorah, shnayim mibei Beis Shapir. Two from the Torah and two from the rabbis. Mibei Beis Shapir, the rabbinic, or the prophets. V'heim v'for Hashem al yidei nevim, it's given by the prophets. Sheva Torah zachor b'shamor. The mitzvah of Zachor and Shamor. Zachor is the positive mitzvah of Shabbat. Shamor is the negative mitzvah of Shabbat. V'shnei parshu al yidei nevim, kavod v'anav. There's a mitzvah of kavod and onen. And he quotes the pasuk. I'm just going to leave everybody. Yeah, okay. I hope you can still hear me. So there's a mitzvah on Shabbos of kavod and onen. What's missing from the mitzvah of Shabbos, of course, is that of simcha. There is no mitzvah to, there's no specific mitzvah to be, whatever the mitzvah of simcha is, let's say to be happy, that the mitzvah doesn't apply on Shabbat. And we know the most common way we know that is because, Rachman Litzan, if somebody is sitting Shiva, so Yontif breaks the Shiva, but the Shabbat doesn't break the Shiva. And there is Shiva on Shabbat. There's no public manifestations of mourning, but the mourner themselves does have to mourn on Shabbat. They're not allowed to learn Torah. The prohibitions of the Shiva do apply on Shabbat individually. So, and I've mentioned before, Rav Soloveitchik points out that's why Nosach Ashkenaz doesn't say Yismechu b'malchucha ha-shomer Shabbos, except at Musaf. Well, that Rav Soloveitchik was very bothered why in Nosach Sfar they say Yismechu b'malchucha at Marav Shachrit and I don't think they say it at Mincha, because there is no din of Simcha on Shabbos. We'll come back to that. So I guess I'll discuss a few ideas here. Number one is the general problem is how the Torah can command an emotion, right? It's the Torah can command us what to do, but it's very, when the Torah commands us, be happy, be sad, be angry, whatever things it tells us, that we realize is a much harder to control. Probably, you go to the Aseret Hadibrot, I think anybody, if we think about it, we all realize by far the hardest of the Ten Commandments is the last, lo tachmod. It's basically human nature to be jealous. And Chazal understood that, and they said it's okay to be jealous when it comes to the realm of knowledge, kinot sofrim, tarba chokma. It's next to impossible to, it's a very difficult mitzvah to fully keep, and there actually is debate, when do you violate that? That's not for now. But I will say the Ibn Ezra has a fancy, he has an explanation. I don't know if it, in the Middle Ages, it sounds very nice. So he explains that when you have a feudal system, so the pauper will never the lowest guy in the totem pole, he'll never in a million years dream that he could marry the king's daughter. It's not in the realm a possibility. You just know it cannot be. So he says it's very hard, but that's the idea that we should have by lo tachmod. Something is just, if we totally put it out of our mind, we can control our emotions. That's what he's saying. So on a certain level, the Torah does want us to control our emotions, as difficult as that may be. I'll let the other people, psychologists can talk about this more, but it's very hard. All these mitzvot, I see somebody asked about love of God. It's just the same idea. How do you command love of a person? Halakhically, what happens in all of these cases is that the halakha basically codifies or puts it into action. So we have a mitzvah to love your neighbor as yourself. So is that really true? It's not really true. And that's why it doesn't say, it says, you can't love anybody else yourself. And Rabbi Akiva, the author of the statement, it was Rabbi Akiva who said, you have to love your neighbor as yourself. He was the same one who famously said, if there are two people in the desert and there's one canteen of water, and Ben Petura says, you have to split the water. What can you do? How can you drink the water and let your neighbor die? Either you'll find water or you'll both die. What can you do? You cannot drink it for yourself. And we don't follow that opinion. We follow Rabbi Akiva. Chayecha kodmin. Your life comes first, like on the airplane. Put the mask on you first and then on other people. You come first and then other people. That's Rabbi Akiva, who said, v'avtal recha kamocha. So there the commentaries explain it doesn't mean it so much literally. It can't mean it literally. It means it, liria, what we want for ourselves, we should want for other people. You should help them, etc. When it comes to other mitzvot, let's say for our purposes, the mitzvah of simcha, to be happy, so the halakha concretizes that mitzvah. It says you have to eat meat and you have to drink wine or buy new clothes or learn Torah. There are certain aspects. Rachman Litzvan, somebody is in a Beilut. So the mitzvah is to be sad. So what do they do? The person, they rip their clothes, they don't shave, they sit on low chairs, etc. None of those. This is the famous idea of Rav Soloveitchik, that the difference between a masa ha-mitzvah and a kima mitzvah, the actions of the mitzvah, the objective actions that we're obligated to do, and the subjective feeling that we're supposed to have. The kium ha-mitzvah, the fulfillment of the mitzvah, is a subjective mitzvah. Either you're happy, you're sad, you have love. That's the mitzvah. But that's too difficult, the concept. What does that mean? So the halakha has to concretize that. So the halakha says you have to do certain things which will hopefully bring about this idea. So that's one of the Rav's essays in Al-Achuva, this difference between Kiyum and Mitzvah. And he says it applies in Simcha, it applies in Beilut, where probably most importantly applies on a daily level for us is in prayer, in Tefillah, where the mitzvah is not to say words. The saying words of them is the objective objectification of the mitzvah, which is avodah shebalev, worship of the heart. We have to worship God. It's all in the internal feeling. It's not in the external action that we do. But without the external action, it's very hard to get the internal feeling. And also the halakha doesn't like to let people run wild. Everybody will say, I find happiness like this, I find like this. The halakha wanted to sort of unify us in a certain process that we have to do. So that's so the mitzvah to be happy on Yontif is to be happy. That's the ideal, to try to create that emotion, and which is not always easy to do, especially if people are by themselves, etc. At the same time, the halakha said we're going to try to do those actions, and that will bring about happiness, eating a nice meal, nice clothing, etc., etc. So I want to go through something I've said in the past, but I'm sure many of you haven't heard it, and if you have, it's okay to review a little bit. I hope always something new. So let me share the document again, one last time, I think. So we'll just take a quick look in the Chumash. I think this is also relatively well known, but it's always good to see inside. But I quoted here the Psukim. So the mitzvah to be happy appears in Sefer Dvarim, which is the laning for the eighth day of Pesach. Rabbi Menachem Liebtag once pointed out to me something very, very, very beautiful. You know, in Israel, they never read Re'eh. Parshat Re'eh, which is the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Rekha. What we read on the last day of Pesach is that three times a year we have to go up to Yerushalayim. It only talks on Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. It does not talk about Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, because Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are not related to the land of Israel. Sefer Dvarim is all about Israel, rank for Israel. It only talks about the agricultural, the pilgrim festivals related to Israel, not Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So he pointed out, me who live in Chutz Lartz, we lay it on the eighth day of Pesach, the second day of Shavuot, of course, neither of which exists in Israel, and we lay it on Shmini Atzeret. It was like the second day of Yom Tov. In other words, in Israel, they laid the Zorah Bracha, and we read this Kol HaBachor, and then on the ninth day, on Simchas Torah, we read the Zorah Bracha. So the three times a year we lay this, we only lane it on the second day of Yontif. So the laning for the second day of Yontif is the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Rekel. Those who live in Israel don't need a reminder. Those of us who don't live in Israel need to be told that three times a year we have to go. I thought that was a very beautiful, insight in a way. Very, very, very simple, but very, very beautiful idea. Very important idea for, and I, those of us, I assume everybody here is actually living outside of Israel. It's a little late for Israelis to, anyway. Okay, so the mitzvah says, so the first thing to point out, which many might know, is the mitzvah of Simcha does not appear on Pesach. Torah doesn't write about it. When you come to the holiday of Shavuot, that's why I didn't quote it. But on Shavuot, Vasita Chag Shavuot Lashem, B'samachta, you should be happy, L'vnei Hashem Elokecha. How do you be happy? With your family. That's a very, very poignant comment. Atah Bincha Bitecha, Abdecha Vavatecha, not only with your immediate family, your servants, your slave, whatever you want to call them, yeah, your servants. Halevi, he doesn't have any land. The Levi Asher B'sharecha, Hager, the stranger, the convert, the immigrant, Hayatom, the orphan, Almana, the widow, Asher B'kirbecha, B'makom Asher, and where do we rejoice? In the place that God has chosen. In the Beit HaMikdash, B'makom Asher B'kirbecha, 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 B'makom Asher B'kirb And then by Chag HaSukkot, we see a similar idea. Chag HaSukkot HaSalaka, V'samachta B'chagecha, Atau Bin Chavitecha, Abdecha Amadcha, Leibia Geri Yatom, Avaman Asher V'Shrecha. By the way, it's interesting. You'll notice there's a subtle switch in the verse. On Shavuot, it says Asher B'Sharecha before the Ger and the Yatom. In other words, your family is in your gate, is living with you, and then the Ger Yatom, Asher B'Kerbecha, is a separate thing. Whereas on Sukkot, it's all joined together. I don't know exactly know why, but just to point that out, I'm sure the Mefarshim, probably the Malbim, some talks about that, but just to point out how somehow the Ger and the Yatom come together with everybody else. And it's that's probably to do with the holiday of Sukkot being more of sharing, inviting people. So the Ger and the Yatom are joined together. There's no separation. Anyway, then the Torah says, Shivat Yamim Tachot L'Shem Mokach Mokom Sheivchar, three times a year to celebrate for 7 days, you have to celebrate in the place that God has chosen in Yerushalayim. God has blessed you, Vayita Ach Sameach, and then the third time that the mitzvah of Simcha appears by Sukkot, is Lachachtem Reim Rishon, this is an Emar, take the Arba meaning, Usmachtem Lifnei Hashem Elokechem Shivat Yamim, you should be rejoiced before God. So you see, the mitzvah of Simcha doesn't appear at all by Pesach, appears twice appears on Shavuot, and appears three times on Sukkot. So clearly you see how Sukkot is meant as a happier time. That's why it's known as Man Simchatenu. Pesach is Man Chevertenu, but it's not Man, Simchatenu. Halachically, in the halach, I don't think makes it a distinction in terms of, eating, drinking, and clothing and all that between Pesach and Sukkot. But you see, in the Torah itself, there clearly is a distinction. Sukkot is meant, and I guess for a farmer, if the agriculture went well that year, it would be extra simcha, etc. But the Torah places the mitzvahs there. Now, there could be another reason. This has to do with the idea that the three components, or the three basic components of the mitzvah of simcha. The first mitzvah that we've already mentioned is eating and drinking. Ein simcha lo b'basar v'yayin. There's no joy unless you have meat and wine. Okay, you're a vegetarian, so you have joy in other things. But that means most people, ein simcha lo b'basar v'yayin. And when the Beit HaMikdash stood, we brought a korban shlamim. You had to bring a chagiga. You celebrated. Most people like meat, and the Torah itself has a little bit of an ambivalent attitude towards eating meat. That's clear. Besides the fact that Adam Rishon was a vegetarian, it was only a later permission, but it's clear from the Torah, ki ta'avan nafshecha l'chol basar. Originally, you could only eat meat in the context of the Beit HaMikdash. That was the original halakha, or in the Mishkan. And later on, the Torah sort of allowed, ki archiv Hashem et bucha, when God will expand your borders, that will be too hard, we'll let you eat meat. But meat was really reserved for Yontif and Shabbat a little bit, but more important than Yontif. Like we said, the mitzvah of Simcha is more on Yontif than on Shabbat. So the first element of Simcha is eating meat, drinking wine. Mar says to buy new clothes. Maybe today it doesn't sound so politically correct, but Mar says buy your wife a new dress, which basically means if you have enough money to buy a new suit for the man or a new dress for the woman gets it at first, and the kids get toys and nuts and candies and all that. That's what the Gemara says. That's the sort of first level of Simcha, and that's really the level of, that's one. The second level of Simcha is Pikudei Hashem Yisharim Mesamchei Lev, that when we study Torah, the commands of God bring us joy and happiness. Pikudei Hashem Yisharim Mesamchei Lev, that's why Rachman Elislan, an Aval, can't study Torah. On Tisha B'Av, we can't study Torah. Torah brings joy, intellectual pursuits. We know a great scientist makes a discovery, you feel great, you read a wonderful book. I'll use Torah here in its broader sense, that it's the intellectual. When we develop and we think about ideas, it brings joy. And of course, our sages were focused on the issue of Torah. And then what we saw already by Shavuot and Sukkot, how do you rejoice with other people, with your family, with the stranger, with the widow, with the orphan? to share with other people. And Sukkot, of course, is the time of sharing. We'll come back to that. And so those are the three main ideas of Simchat, the physical, joy and pleasure, the intellectual, and sharing with others. And we know, you talk to, you know, they have in all the books, when they talk to big philanthropists, so they'll say they usually feel very excited. When Bill Gates writes a check for $1 billion, he feels good about it. When people, they have to be people, they feel very, there's a feeling I've done something really good when I share with other people. You know, we all know that when we help other people, we have a nice feeling inside. Sometimes we have to be pushed to help other people, but usually we feel good about ourselves. And that's what the Torah is saying. And these, of course, represent the three Yamim Tovim. Pesach, of course, focuses on the physical. It's all about eating, all about food, and it's all about our freedom from the Exodus, and we're no longer slaves. That focuses on the physical aspect of Simcha. The holiday of Shavuot, of course, the way our rabbis understood it, Zman Matan Torah Teinu, we focus on the intellect, on the study of Torah, that aspect of Simcha. And Sukkot, like I just mentioned, we focus on the sharing aspect of Simcha. So those are the three elements of Simcha, which you could say each one is represented by one holiday, and each one is more important than the other. Obviously, the goal of Yetzia Mitzrayim was to get to Matan Torah. Matan Torah is more important. Obviously, you need the physical freedom as our base. That is very important. But the goal, the higher level, is intellectual. But even higher than the intellectual and the receiving of the Torah is sharing with others. And that's the holiday of Sukkot. And therefore, Simcha is mentioned more by Sukkot and more by Shavuot. It's not mentioned at all on Pesach. And then, first, to finish that, Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, of course, the real aspect of Simcha, the real goal of Simcha is feeling in the presence of God. Usmachtem lifnei Hashem Elokechem, lifnei Hashem. I said I wouldn't share again, but let me just point it out. Right, the Torah says, Ulakatem lechem b'yom rishon priyetz adar napeit zavot arvei nachal usmachtem lifnei Hashem for shivat yamim. So, of course, this verse actually contradicts itself. It seems that you take on the first day these things and be happy for 7 days. It's a little bit strange. In other words, what, on the first day you're happy because you have the Arba Minim, and what about the other days? It's a little bit strange. So the Gemara, of course, interprets this verse to mean that in the temple, the mitzvah of the Arba Minim was all 7 days. Outside the temple was only one day. We, of course, after the temple was destroyed, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai made a decree because we want to remember the joy of the temple. As the commentaries point out, there are two aspects to remember the Beit HaMikdash. There is Zecher L'Churban, to remember the destruction, Tisha B'Av, the mourning, the breaking the glass at the wedding, whatever, all the customs we might have. That's Zecher L'Churban. But Zecher L'Mikdash, to remember the Mikdash, that's the joy. That's to remember the positive of the Beit HaMikdash, to recreate the Beit HaMikdash even without the Beit HaMikdash. We can live without the Beit HaMikdash, Rabbi Akiva, it's okay. We can have a relationship to God, but we want to recreate the joy. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made a decree that after the temple was destroyed, we're going to be like we're in the temple. And everywhere he takes the lulav all 7 days. But because the verse, the Chazal understood the verse actually contradicts. Is it the first day or the seventh day? So you say the first day is everywhere, lifnei Hashem. In the presence of God, you rejoice for 7 days. Where is the presence of God? That is in the Beit HaMikdash. Ki Beiti Beit Tefillah, that's where God's home is. And therefore, there's a mitzvah to take the lulav and letrak all 7 days in the temple. But really what the verse is saying is that the mitzvah of Simcha is a mitzvah that be to feel the presence of God. Now that's all we talked about, the Masa Mitzvah and the Kiyum HaMitzvah, you know, to eating meat and learning Torah and sharing with others. Those are all objective actions we can do. To feel the presence of God, what the real mitzvah is, the real mitzvah of Simcha, not the subjective aspect, that's the key mitzvah, that's the hardest part. But the one who can feel the presence of God, we know when you feel that the God is with us, that can release us from so much tension in the world. We have so much pressure and so much everything. But if we feel God is watching us, you know, it's wonderful. Rav Soloveitchik would talk about how when he would learn Torah, he would feel the presence of his father, you know. And he spoke beautifully about his mother. his father, his mother taught him the warmth of Judaism, this, which is really the our subjective aspect. That his mother taught him the joy, the how to worship God. His father taught him Hilchot Shabbos, but his mother taught him what Shabbos means. It's also the same idea. I say the Masa Mitzvah and the Kim Mitzvah. And that's so that's the mitzvah. And by the way, you see it just to point out, this is of course the culminating pasuk on Yom Kippur. It's also the other time it says Lifnei Hashem on Sukkot, where Lifnei Hashem to be happy. On Yom Kippur, where Lifnei Hashem to be to purify ourselves, to become better people. And that's, of course, the famous statement, Lo yu yamim tovim b'Yisrael k'chamisha sarba v'k'yom ha-kippurim. So there were no happier days than Yom Kippur and Tisha B'av. The Gemara understands Yom Kippur. He understands God. We come close to God. Slicha u'mechila. Yom shenitna bo luchot achronot. We got the second set of the tablets. The Torah was really given on Yom Kippur. That I understand. But why Tuba? But anyways, you see, it's the presence of God. It's the Lifnei Hashem Titaru that brings out the joy on Yom Tiv. And this explains, Rav Soloveitchik explains why we don't have Kabbalat Shabbos or Kabbalat Yom Tov. You know, we come to shul on Friday night. I know it's only in the 16th century that Kabbalat Shabbos got started, but still, every custom represents a deep religious ideal. And so we welcome our Shabbat, but we don't welcome the Yom Tov. And that's our celebration in Spain, because Yom Tov is all about going into God's home and being in the presence of God. We visit God. On Shabbat, God visits us. We welcome the Shabbat queen to our house. So when you welcome somebody to their house, you welcome them. You say, you get the band playing and the 21-gun salute and the red carpet, and you make your house look all beautiful, and you set the table, etc., etc. That's the mitzvah. Kavod Shabbos, the version saying, Kavod means the preparations for you do in advance. Oneg means the joy we have on Shabbat itself, the meals, etc. So that's on Shabbat. On Yom Tov, we go to God's house. We go visit the Beit HaMikdash. So, you know, we don't welcome ourselves to somebody else's house. God is welcoming us. So therefore, we don't have a notion of Kabbalat Yom Tov on Yom Tov. We start Mizmor Shir, etc. So that's some of the aspect. I'll just, one last idea. You know, we say, we have two words for the mitzvah of simcha, really, or at least among two of the words are, we talk about, you know, sason and simcha. You know, we wish achatan and kala shabara sason b'simcha, and we talk about, you know, on Rosh Hashanah, you know, simcha l'artzecha v'sason l'irecha. So what exactly is the difference between sason and simcha? So different commentaries struggle with this question a little bit, but we'll take one idea, explain, and I would say it's a difference between, you know, joy or pleasure and happiness. You know, I believe that our society, modern man, has unfortunately conflated pleasure and happiness, and we know they're not the same. Pleasure is maybe a building block of happiness, but we're not against pleasure, but it's fleeting, and pleasure will never bring happiness. If your focus is to get more pleasure, we are living inside you. You know, people have so much, but there's probably less happiness than, you know, there are more mental health issues. People are more depressed. Pleasure can never bring happiness. It can be the stepping stone if you build on it and use that pleasure for something. So I think that's basically how some of the first have explained that. Sason is an external, a spontaneous joy, happiness in the moment. Maybe it's even more than pleasure, I would say. But this sason is like, you know, when you get married, a moment of extreme joy, of extreme happiness. Simcha is a much more internal feeling. It's something you build over time. You build a relationship, there's joy. Sason is very nice, but sason without simcha also can't really last. The joy has to be an internal feeling that people have. And it's hard. And it's hard, especially, now. It's harder when people are nervous and people are worried and people are separated from their families. You know, but the idea that somehow we, like we discussed I forget the couple of shiurim ago with that the night and the day. I guess last week, the redemption always begins at night. We always see hope in the night. That's the Jewish way. We wouldn't be here. The Jewish people are optimists. The Jewish people always see hope no matter what. Hatikvah was chosen as our national anthem, not by fluke. You know, I always say the early Zionists may have been, they may have eaten on Yom Kippur, but they engaged with our way of life. In other words, they fought it and they engaged with it because it was very important. I always liked the beautiful idea. You know, there are 120 members of the Israeli Knesset. There were 120 members in 1948 when there were 600,000 Jews, and there are 120 members now when there are 6.5 million Jews in Israel. In Canada, and I assume in the United States too, they keep increasing the members in Parliament as the population grows. I know in the Senate they don't. I don't know if Congress grows, but Israel doesn't grow. It's always 120. Why is it 120? Because the Anshei Knesset Hagdolah, that's why it's called actually the Knesset, because the Anshei Knesset Hagdolah had 120 people in it. And so the founders of the State of Israel wanted to say, we're connected. My cousin once got very angry about that, the chutzpah of these people. I thought it was a beautiful idea. They want to connect to the Anshei Knesset Hagdolah, who restored Jewish sovereignty. They were the leaders when we came back in the Second Commonwealth. So it's the same thing. Hatikvah represents the deep yearning of the Jewish people, but we always see sason and simcha, and we always see hope. So that's I wish everybody work on a relationship with God. And God, sometimes it's easiest to develop your relationship with God when you're alone. I can tell you some of the davening, not every day, but many of the days that I'm in davening, I find it much more meaningful. Maybe I shouldn't say this, but I get davening sometimes with the family together or just by myself. You know, I sit there quietly and I focus on the words. I'm in no hurry. I don't have to go anywhere. I don't have to run through the davening we do during the week. So we have an opportunity perhaps to reconnect with God. And that's really what Yontif is about. And we hope that by the holiday of Shavuot, we'll be able to celebrate fully with our families and with the Ger and the Yatom and the Yalmanah. And that's, we see today, you know, they had the headlines of the Globe and Mail today that half the deaths in Canada are from people in nursing homes. We're failing in how we treat the elderly and the poor. So I want to wish everybody a wonderful Yontif. Just let me give a 45-second review of the Shir. We discussed the idea of what happened at the Yamsuf, the singing at the Yamsuf, who crossed first. Did they want to cross or didn't they want to cross? And did was it Binyamin or Yehuda? And the difference between what somebody's going to say they're going to do and what they do at the moment. We discussed why there's no halal the last days of Yontif. The Gemara only knows the reason of Korbanot. Korbanot brings us closer to God. There's extra simcha. Later on in medieval times, the idea of bin folei becha al tismach, we cannot be happy. And then we discussed there's an inherent tension between bin folei becha al tismach b'avod v'shem rina. Then we discussed that there's no mitzvah of simcha on Shabbat. There is on Yontif, that's the added element of Yontif. And we discussed the different manifestations of the mitzvah of simcha, the physical, the intellectual, the sharing, but that all leads to feeling a closeness to God, and that's the Beit HaMikdash, why Yontif is connected to Beit HaMikdash, and then there's a subjective mitzvah with objective act is something we can work on. And so with that, we'll wish everybody a wonderful Yontif. Just moving ahead, I'm in the midst of planning we have a very wonderful program right after Pesach. It's not 100% finished, but we're almost there. Please God, I'm going to continue the Friday shiurim I was giving 9:30 on Pirkei Avot after Pesach. So everybody's welcome this Friday, right after Pesach, 9:30. Please God, I'll do Pirkei Avot, and then keep everybody posted via email for all the classes we'll be having. Okay, want to thank you for coming and wish everybody a Yontif of Sason and Simcha, v'samachta b'chagecha, and we should enjoy. Thank you very much.
Have you mean day, this everybody. Friday?
I'm sorry? This Friday, yeah. This Friday.
9:30?
9:30 a.m., yeah. That's, This Friday, Pirkei Avot, 9:30 in the morning. Yeah. Pirkei Avot is great. Okay. I think it's great. Okay, any questions, comments, and be well, everybody.